The following is a broadcast of 1-800-LAW-CALL. Why don't we begin, Scott, by hearing about the young man who lied to get pain medicine but ended up as an incomplete paraplegic. And I, first of all, want to ask you, what is an incomplete paraplegic?
Well, let me get to the beginning of the story, and then we'll work our way into that.
Okay.
And yes, this is a tragic circumstance only because of the fact that, as you initiated in the opening, was he ended up being paralyzed at the end of all this when all he was attempting to do, albeit under suspicious circumstances, was to get some narcotics or pain medication because he was a drug seeker. This particular gentleman was 24 years old when he went to an emergency room with simple complaints of abdominal pain. After a number of tests and studies revealed the fact that he had an appendicitis, he was scheduled for surgery and his appendix was removed. However, following that appendectomy, a CT scan of the removed appendix showed some degree of an abnormality, and that allowed this gentleman to be admitted into the hospital, where over the course of 5 days, he was evaluated prior to being discharged. However, prior to being discharged, he claimed that he had increasing redness on his arm as well as continued abdominal pain. There was redness and a raised area around the IV site utilized as part of the surgical procedure. And he was prescribed, in accordance with the standards of care, antibiotics as well as some pain medication for possible infection. Now, here's where the story becomes more tragic, and that is, in keeping with the standards of care, the doctors, in addition to giving him a broad-spectrum antibiotic, also had blood cultures taken. He was discharged after he had received those antibiotics. 2 days after discharge, those blood cultures, the results of which came back, showed that he had a blood-borne infection, better known as MRSA, that our listeners certainly are familiar with. Over the course of the following month to 6 weeks, he developed an abscess on his spine. This abscess got so bad that by the time he re-presented back to the healthcare providers, he was in debilitating pain and was diagnosed with osteomyelitis in his spine. Although an emergency decompression surgery of his spine was attempted, the plaintiff's spine became completely decimated, and he was rendered a paraplegic. Now, a complete paraplegic versus an incomplete paraplegic, to go to your question, Frank, you know, there are a lot of times where people are paralyzed either from the waist down or from the waist up. A lot of people have one or the other. They're either paralyzed of their upper extremities or their lower extremities, what's known as an incomplete paralysis. That's also with a complete paralysis. He had no function of his hands, his arms, his legs, and he had bladder and bowel dysfunction. So what ultimately ended up being just a gentleman who was a narcotic seeker, a drug seeker, and he lied on his presentation to the emergency room by giving them false information concerning his demographics. That ended up being part of the defense in the case, in that the defense attempted to argue that we tried to contact you after the blood cultures came back to be positive, but because you gave us false information regarding where you lived and your telephone number, we couldn't get in touch with you. But in fact, he had given him information, as was recorded on one of the medical records, that he was living with his mother and actually gave the mother's address. So the allegation in the case, in terms of the standards of care, was that once those blood cultures came back positive for MRSA, the standards of care required the healthcare providers to get in touch with him to advise him that he had this bloodborne infection that obviously could have catastrophic consequences, which led to an abscess or an infectious process emanating from his spine, which ultimately whittled its way into the spinal cord, causing spinal edema, stenosis, and ultimate decimation, which rendered him a paraplegic. There were, as proven, insufficient attempts to contact him with respect to the MRSA diagnosis. And one of the issues in the case, likewise, was that the healthcare providers never contacted an infectious disease expert while he was in the hospital, given the signs and symptoms of an infection, both around the appendectomy site, around his IV site, as well as when the appendix was removed. They concluded it was normal, but there were certainly abnormalities associated with it, whereby the healthcare providers certainly didn't put two and two together to prevent this infectious process.
So a couple of days went by before they ever got in touch with anyone, right?
Well, actually, no. He was discharged 48 hours later, come the positive culture results. About 38 days later is when he re-presents back to another medical center. Unfortunately, it was too little too late, as this abscess was allowed to grow in his spine, start to decimate it, and therefore culminate in paraplegia.
Was there any attempt here by medical people, just because he lied and took some pain medication that he shouldn't have maybe taken, to paint him as like he was at fault with all this?
No, although that sometimes is attempted, you have to obviously strategically be very careful about doing that. Although it turned out that this gentleman was exhibiting drug-seeking behavior, you know, drug-seeking individuals like this, certainly, just like the rest of us who aren't drug seekers, medical malpractice is blind, so to speak. So just because you have a certain predisposition, or you may have something else wrong with you, perhaps cognitively, or you have some social abnormality, perhaps, or you're a drug seeker, that doesn't mean that malpractice can be committed upon you and healthcare providers can get away with it.
So if they would have gotten to this MRSA a lot quickly, we might not be talking about this case today?
We definitely would not have. I mean, the cultures, the whole purpose of doing cultures is to get a specific organism so that you can then tailor your antibiotic therapy and your treatment plan towards that specific bacteria or that organism. What healthcare providers do under the circumstances of waiting for culture results or while it's pending is to give individuals a broad-spectrum antibiotic such that it can treat a lot of different organisms and bacteria, and therefore wait until you're able to hone down with specificity what particular organism you're dealing with, so you can then go to that antibiotic regimen that will work under those circumstances.
I heard that MRSA can be contracted in hospitals quite frequently. If that's the case, can hospitals be held responsible? This is kind of related, but not related to this particular case, but can hospitals be, litigated because of that?
Well, sure. There are hospital-acquired or community-acquired infections. The allegation is not you breached the standard of care because you allowed him to get MRSA. That wasn't part of the case, because there are infectious processes that people acquire in the absence of malpractice. The point is, what are you going to do about it to diagnose it? And then when you get blood culture results, which is entirely appropriate and within the standard of care, you have to have a mechanism in place to make sure you contact those patients that are no longer in the hospital so that they can be brought back in, or their primary care physicians can be notified to make sure they're getting the appropriate treatment such that things like these don't happen.
Young man, too. Right?
24 years old, yes.
Wow. Unbelievable. The views and opinions expressed on WCBN by the host, guest, and panelists do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or advertisers of the station. Proper legal advice depends on a complete analysis of all facts and circumstances. The legal advice given during this program is intended as general information only, and no attorney-client relationship is created with callers or listeners to this program.